correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, your gamer's role.
www.d20radio.com.
Roll for initiative.
Greetings, RFI Nation, and welcome to Roll for Initiative Podcast, issue number 21. I am one of your hosts, DM Vincent, along with DM Jason and DM Nick. DM Nick, we're going to start off with you, fresh from Origins. How you doing
yes.
this week, buddy?
I am ready to go, fresh from Origins. Just got back 2 hours ago, and I'm not going to do, boy, my arms are tired kind of thing.
Well, we'll get into that in just a second. We want to go through a few things, and then you can get into it. We'll sit back, relax, and enjoy some of your stories from Origin. Jason, sitting in the background, how you doing there, buddy?
Hey there. I'm just on my edge of my seat waiting to hear about the conference or the convention I couldn't make it to, so this is an exciting time.
Definitely. We all want to hear about Origins. But as Gen Con, actually a little bit more than a month away now at this point.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Jason and I will be at Gen Con. You can... hunt us down and tackle us and get us, you know, to talk to you for a few minutes. I will. Jason will just ignore you. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, and actually, if anybody has been making plans for Gen Con and worried about the fact that you couldn't get a hotel room because you started too late, we actually I reserved a whole block of hotel rooms for my gaming group, and a couple of people have backed out. So I'm going to have to call the Marriott and tell them to just go ahead and give them to first come, first serve. But I will hold on to those. So if somebody's in that situation and wants to drop us a line saying, you know, I want to get one of those Marriott rooms, I've got some extras. I mean, you got to pay for it. You know, I'll just give you the reservation. But the point is, we made these reservations a year ago. I think they've been sold out for just that long. So, you know, rather than just see them go to any old buddy, if anybody wants to drop us a line, no gimmicks. Just let me know if you want them.
Yeah, definitely. Send us an email, rfistaff@gmail.com, and I will make sure it gets forwarded to Jason, and he'll give you the information, and you guys can coordinate that way. So if you want a room at Gen Con, hit us up. Let's go heading over onto the website. I don't think any articles have been published in the last week or so. Jason, that was your area.
Well, okay. So, yeah, we actually do have a new one up from Todd, and so what we're going to be doing is you know, we're recording today on Sunday. Everybody's going to hear this show probably on Wednesday or so, but I'll be putting up another article by Todd right after this, and I'm actually going to look and see what it is. But no, we did just put up two new ones. I believe we put up the Marcanius City and the Ecology of the Hill Giant. Yeah, one great article on you know, populating a city, another great one on the Hill Giant, and we'll see what we have for coming up. I'll let you know. Did we get poll results?
It's on the polls archive page. If you just click on that, you can see every poll that we've had.
Cool. Yeah, because we had a lot of good feedback to the dice question from last week, so I went ahead and took the initiative to put up a poll. And we asked how many dice is too many, and we had zero votes for anything more than one set of dice is unnecessary, so no minimalists. We had zero votes for dice, who brings dice, so the player that always forgets the dice also forgot to vote. Seven votes for a couple sets is okay, but non-standard is overdoing it. 16 votes for as long as you can carry them in a dice bag, it's not too many.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the winner, 54%, 27 votes, there's no such thing as too many dice.
I have to agree.
Vindicated.
I'm raspberrying all you guys.
I have been vindicated.
There is a new poll up, which alignment do you like playing? You can go click there on your perusal around the website if you have fun. You guys vote too.
Yes.
We have forums on our website. The plugin that was mysteriously not there before, Jason, has suddenly just shown up out of nowhere, and no, I didn't do anything. I thought maybe
That's cool.
you did.
Those unseen servants again.
Yeah, I guess so. We have suggestion, we have feedback, we have what do you want to hear, sage advice, and is also looking for players, or people have a central place to jump to who like first edition. And we will monitor the forums and just take a peek at things every once in a while. If you know, you want to chat to us, tell us what's up. Hey, what's up?
What's up?
That's right. And now, the moment
I want
to
point out that that was Nick.
Yeah.
I just want to point that out. That was Nick.
Okay. Anyway.
I don't want anybody thinking I did. No.
Okay.
With that all put aside, the moment we've all been waiting for, the wonderful and grand...
What's all the bumping around? Stop the bumping.
Sorry.
I know you're excited. Stop.
Okay, my intro interrupted three times already. Nick, go.
Okay. Well, thanks, guys. It's Nick here, and I am fresh back from Origins 2010. 35th anniversary of the convention this
Woo!
Year. Yeah, 35 years, and I'm older than the convention.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Anywho, I would like to put a special shout-out to Ancalagon from the dragonsfoot.org website for running a great first edition AD&D game on Friday night. Mm-hmm. My whole group had a blast playing. It was definitely different. Refreshingly different. Okay. And that's all I could say about it.
No, that's not all you can say about it. Come on, what
happened?
Well,
I don't want to give it away.
It's over.
Well, he's run it last year. And I'll say this. It is, you're on a quest to rescue Richard the Lionheart.
Ooh.
Cool.
Yeah, so it's set in a historical... There is a true historical backdrop for this.
Sweet.
So he has pre-gens for it. Great, fun time. We all died, but it was still fun. So, yeah, it was great. And I hope to see him again next year, and maybe we can organize a couple of events so we can have some more first edition AD&D going on at the convention. So, again, thanks to Ancalagon for that. Awesome game. Far as attendance, it looked like to me that it was a way up from last year. So, and it looked a lot better as far as attendance was concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I would say on the old school gaming note, Swords and Wizardry.
Yes.
That was on sale. I mm-hmm. saw that, and it appeared to be selling quite well. So that was very cool. So people were able to purchase that.
You're almost forgetting the most important question of all. Did you wear your T-shirt?
Yes, I did, and I will get to that in a little bit.
Okay.
I did wear the T-shirt. Yes, I did. But on the product side...
Yes.
One of the coolest products I saw was by gamersrule.com, and we'll post a link on the website to that.
Yes.
And,
this is the guys that we were talking about last week, the ones that have the book out, the collector's guide to everything,
yes.
right? Yeah. And what did they bring with them?
They brought what is called the Dungeon Deck. Where you could literally produce a whole night's dungeon adventure in 30 seconds from this
wow.
deck. It's broken up into 7 different sections. You have a lure to get you into the dungeon, and let's say it starts to rain and flashes of lightning strobe across the sky. This is no ordinary storm. Up ahead, you see an entrance. Maybe you could take shelter in there. So that's like your lure into the quest, mm-hmm. and there's a type of entrance. Maybe all you see is a dark hole in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Then the atmosphere is, let's say, it's hollow and echoey. The slightest sound seems to echo endlessly through this area. Then the dungeon master draws a random map. In the setting, maybe it's a tomb, an ancient place or burial for a long-forgotten king and warlord. Under the setting, it has a breakdown of all 6 different rooms, and then you have brief descriptions of what's in each different room.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the challenges. Maybe there's spiders, scorpions, and other things. And then your reward, the treasure. And that would say it's a roll restore one dead character to life.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's it. And you could, it's all random. You could just randomly do the different maps and the lures and everything. So there's literally hundreds of different combinations. So we're going to be using this tonight for our creature feature.
Sweet. So, yes.
So I already have all the cards picked out. When we get to the creature feature this evening, we'll just kind of go from there.
So more about Origins. So
very, very cool product. So, also, I would say overall, as far as the gaming is concerned that went on, there was a more of a mix of different games going on than any one game dominating the convention this year, which I think is a good thing. So there was like a definitely a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So more of that going on this year than I've seen in previous years. Really nice con t-shirt for the 35th anniversary.
What's
I picked
like?
One of those up. Also, there was a roll for initiative t-shirt sighting.
Yay!
Oh, somebody else's.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes, that was on Friday after the AD&D game.
All right. Did you give him something free, or you know?
I met him, shook his hand, took his picture, and posted it on the website. He said, "Really cool." He goes, "I love your show," and I tell all my friends. I'm like, "Cool. Tell your friends. Tell your enemies."
That's
very
awesome.
Cool. Yep. So that was cool that we had one sighting. So hopefully we'll get more, hopefully for Gen Con.
Yeah, I'm going to try to bring a few extra t-shirts with me to Gen Con just in case there's anybody who we run into there that needs
very
to
cool.
get pick one up. But this is amazing. So how many days were you at Origins?
I got there Tuesday night. Tuesday.
Yeah,
I had to get there early because that was the earliest I could – that was the latest I could get the room. I wanted to go on Wednesday – because the convention now is Wednesday through Sunday.
Right.
Yeah.
But still, I got there Tuesday night. I always like to get there day early anyway.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, so you don't, like, rush around and stuff like that.
Yeah, I know I'm cashing in a lot of my vacation time for Gen Con. I'm getting there a day early and staying a day late.
Yeah, so I was there Same for, here. Like, really 6 whole days.
Oh, so, man.
What is it?
It was a blast.
Gen Con, the 5th to the 8th, right, Jace?
Something like that.
Yeah, I'm going from the 4th to the 9th, so extra day both ends.
There you go. Extra day to rest.
We should, if we are low, maybe we should see if we could find some people and organize a game up. That'd be a good idea.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Or a little night out kind of thing. I'll go to the local, the closest, like, you know, pub and what have you. And
oh, yeah,
have
there's
a ton
of stuff.
Here. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, we went to last year we went with a bunch of people to the Hooters. Oh. And it was really funny because the Hooters waitress was saying like all of these nerds are in here and it's like the calmest the place has ever been because they're all afraid to look at the waitress.
Oh my god. That's too funny.
Well, they must not be real nerds. Oh, wait, that they are.
It was pretty great. It was pretty great.
Well,
Hooters
we had a whole bunch of us that went to O'Shaughnessy's downtown there.
Mm-hmm.
And in downtown Columbus, and we were not quiet. I probably was the loudest one of the bunch. So,
How was the vendor selection there at the Origins?
Vendor selection was very good.
Okay,
And the amount of vendors was considerably more than last year.
Did we have the big ones?
Let's see. Kinzer Co. was there. We also had Reaper Miniatures.
Okay.
Nice.
Yep. We also had Mongoose Publishing.
Ooh.
Black Blade, I believe, who does Swords and Wizardry. Like I said, was on sale. They were there.
Did you happen to see the Dark Swords miniatures, guys? The ones that do the licensed Elmore miniatures?
No, I didn't, but Mr. Elmore was there and had a booth.
Cool.
So he had his booth set up, Chessex, Game Science.
Oh, cool. Was watching
yeah.
that?
You got to get the demonstration of why the dice are the way they are, all that business?
Yeah, and I personally don't buy it, but hey. I'm not convinced. So
we will sit down and we will roll sometime and we'll just count. That's all we'll do. Just count.
Yeah, we'll put all of our listeners to sleep with that one.
Yeah, really.
That'll be our experimental avant-garde podcast. It'll be the one where we just spend 90 minutes rolling the same die over and over and announcing the thing. So the podcast will just 20.
Dude, 13, I'd rather get six. Slowly eaten alive by a gelatinous cube than do that. So.
There was a radio station. There was a radio station near somewhere in Iowa. I just remember this when I was a kid. When they were getting ready to go on the air, they spent 2 weeks with just a disembodied voice just saying random numbers. Or not random numbers, but just counting down. And it was like a computer, you know, voice or whatever. And it just started at like, I don't know, whatever it takes 2 weeks to count, you know, 100,000, and it just sat there and did it, and we'd tune into it and be like, what is happening? We had no idea. And then it was just a stupid radio station.
That's creepy.
it was great.
Let's not do that.
Yeah. Nick, was Watsi there at the vendors?
You know, no, they were not. They haven't been there in the past couple of years, actually.
Wizard of the Coast, no showing.
Wizards not showing. Had not been there, I would say, since 2008.
Was White Wolf Publishing there?
I did not notice White Wolf.
Well, I mean, does Wizards? I mean, since they're officially sponsoring the Gen Con, so I don't know. Is there some sort of conflict of interest in doing an Origins thing?
In a way, I think there is.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I tend not to pay attention to a whole lot of the bigger publishers.
Sure.
I like the more of these smaller in-house. I mean, who is Flying Buffalo Games is still alive and kicking, you know. Mm-hmm. So if you ever wanted to pick up a copy of Grimtooth's Traps,
yep,
they're still alive and kicking, folks.
Nice.
Very, very cool as far as vendors is concerned. Right. The Knights of the Dinner Table live reading was fun.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's always a blast. It was especially cool because my friend Jeff and his son Rasalyn got to do a reading together along with two other people, and it was Raceland's first big convention to go to, so that was particularly cool.
I wonder how many people just flipped out at his name.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
They look at his name, they're like, that can't be his real name. No, that's what's on his birth certificate. No kidding.
Any authors? Others?
Not that I recall.
Okay.
I have to look through my program again. It's all such a blur.
Yeah. I mean, were you staying right by the convention hall? Were you able to game maximum hours?
I would say it's as far as like maximum gaming hours, it was like it was very good. I was doing about, I don't know, 4 to 8 hours a day gaming.
Wow.
So, yeah. And plus, I still had time to go and check out the dealer's room.
Does True Dungeon go to Origins? I've never been to Origins.
They had something similar to that this year.
How can you do something similar to True Dungeons?
It wasn't True Dungeon themselves.
It was False Dungeons.
It was some other
False Mazes.
It was some other group that was promoting something like True Dungeon.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, how could you do something similar? It's so much work to put that together. I don't know.
I think this one was a little bit more low key.
Yeah. They do such a great job. I couldn't imagine anybody else, you know. Yeah. Pulling it off.
Other than that, strangely enough, I think I got enough sleep and no hangover.
Nice. Whoa.
So, so all in all, out of rating 1 to 10, I would say this was a 9.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a 9 on the con coolness scale. So, and that's overall my report.
I think
I'm sure I'll think things later.
No, I the most important thing is what steal or what deal did you get of anything there?
Oh, swag?
Yeah.
Yeah, besides the dungeon deck, which I purchased, which was very cool, I got everybody in their swag bag got a copy of the Axis and Allies miniatures game, the basic set.
Oh.
And everybody also got a 30-card deck of Magic the Gathering of one color.
Mm-hmm.
Which was very cool. So everybody got, like, two games in their bag, and there was, like, six and seven of us staying in the room. We're, like, with what? All of our Axis and Ally stuff, like, we could have a huge battle right here on the floor. This is great. So that was very cool. And so, yeah, the swag was awesome this year.
Now that you say that, I wonder, has anybody ever done a collectible card game that's based on historical wargaming?
There is one.
There is, really?
Yeah, there's a World War II one. I know. I've seen it.
I think that might be enough to make me play a CCG.
Yeah, I just can't think of the name. I've seen it. I'm sure one of our listeners will email it to us.
Yeah, because I never play those kind of things.
It's funny you mention that. When I was, obviously on the. If anybody doesn't know, the best day to buy your stuff is on the last day on Sunday, because all of the vendors and publishers, they don't want to bring all this stuff back with them.
Yeah.
So they're like cutting huge deals. I got like, what was it, 10 Dungeon Crawl Classic modules for $30.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Which are easily convertible.
Was there any first edition stuff there at all, or no?
A lot of first edition stuff.
Ooh.
Not going for those prices, though.
Oh.
First edition stuff generally goes for pretty high prices.
At a con, it does, yeah.
Yeah, it does.
But you're talking about stuff that was sitting out on the, just like the regular vendor booths, right?
Yeah, like Noble Knight Games was there, so.
Yeah, I mean, and they need to have that time when they get the maximum for their stuff, so I don't begrudge them that at all.
Oh, I mean, when you're talking about the World War II thing, I picked up the GURPS World War II book mm-hmm. and like four or five supplements, all of it for like $75. It's like half off.
Wow.
Because I was hoping to like run one day a GURPS World War II campaign.
You know, let me know if you find a way to do that, if you decide to do it over Skype or something, because that, well, I don't know how you could do that. But anyways, that's amazing.
Yeah, always good
deals. You know,
deals.
The thing with getting the stuff on the last day is I know you need to do that, but usually the stuff I see that I want is there's not a bunch of them there, so I'm just like, whatever, I'll bite the bullet and I'll pay what the first day price is because I want it that much. Like at Gen Con, they've got the auction room with and you know, they're very straightforward about it. The cool thing with the pricing is they actually have a price where it'll say first day price, second day price, third day, and the last day's the lowest price. And most of the time, I try to wait it out, but you know, if there's like some really cool top secret module there that I've never seen before or something, you know, I'll just pay it.
Yeah,
yeah. I usually go to the auction, and this year I missed it. I just didn't got. I usually run through there and maybe hang out for like an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I just never gotten around to going to the auction because there's always like first edition or basic D&D stuff being auctioned off, or they have stuff at the auction that's not necessarily being auctioned off, but they have like an area where you could just purchase it.
Yeah, they do exactly the same way. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
but I mean, the way I look at it is, look, I play first edition, so I don't have to have 500 miniatures, and I don't have to have, you know, expensive dioramas and all this other stuff, so I can spend the money on other things.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Like beer and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe beer. Food. And maybe food.
Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. Who knows? And ultimately, I actually came in under budget. Shock. Horrors. My wife was really happy about that. She's like, you only spent how much? I go, yeah. She's like, no wonder she's so happy with me tonight. So,
whoa now. All right now.
I mean, it's like, hey, I come in under budget. What I was budgeted for the con. It's awesome. So it wasn't awesome. Like I was living off potato chips the whole time. So, you know, it helps.
You know, the first con I ever went to was Omicron, and I ended up sleeping on somebody's hotel room floor because I went for a 3-day convention when I was like 16, and I didn't bother getting a room.
What?
Yeah. I've done that. I did that at OmaCon as well.
Yeah, so. Just like met random people. I'm like, can I stay on your floor? I don't have a place to stay.
Yep, just put your head on your bag. You're fine.
Yep.
So I think that pretty much wraps up Origins. If there's any other stuff, I'll put it out there on the website or out on Dragon's Foot. And,
stick an article up with some photos.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll get some photos out there, absolutely.
For sure.
All right, well, that'll end that, and we'll head into Sage Advice so we can get right on to the nitty-gritty of the show and talk about all those wonderful things that people write to us.
Sage Advice.
Sage Advice. So we have a couple things here to talk about tonight. Jason, I believe you have the first one to start things off.
Oh, yeah. So the first one, I guess, that Emma Larson wrote in and said I was pretty close last week. I called him Emil Larson, but it's Emma Larson. But apparently, if outside of the Nordic countries, he said, you did a pretty good job of pronouncing my name correctly. You said it the way people say outside of the Nordic countries, which is appropriate. We are now outside of the Nordic countries, although I'm a little bit ashamed because I'm from Iowa, which kind of actually is a Nordic country, so I should have known that it was Emil, not Emil.
So they're not going to invade us?
No, they're not going to invade us. Yes. since Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota, et cetera, are already parts of Scandinavia, I think we're okay. So anyways, the way it's pronounced over here is something like E is in another case. He says how to do it. But hey, you can't get them all right on the first try. Anyways, the question this time around is about magic items. Do you make them only to give bonuses, only bad things like cursed, or do you mix it up? So, Vince?
I mix it up. I would put curses and bonuses on both good and bad things. Nick?
How about you, Nick?
I mixing it up like on the same item?
No. I mean just in general when you're giving, or I mean he means just in general when you're giving out magic items during not giving them out, but placing them in an adventure. Are you doing this just because you feel the players need some bonuses, only to give them bad things like cursed, or do you mix it up in general around the game?
I tend to be as random as possible. You know, whatever comes up on the chart when I roll it up, that's what comes up. You know,
that's
if it's cursed, if
brave.
It's cursed. Hey, it's them, not me.
No, I mean, it's just brave that you might, you know, go ahead and drop a deck of many things, or, you know, I don't know, ring of the Freedy or whatever into the player's laps.
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
I mean, for myself, when I give them, you know, I don't really, I guess this has a lot to do with the way that I like to create adventures as a DM. I don't think so much about what's going to really be the best advantage for them in the campaign or the best way to hold them back with a curse. I usually go for the stuff that's going to be the most fun for them or me to find.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing more fun as a player than getting a great magic item. You know, and I also try to think about magic items that are going to be identifiable, and I don't mean with the spell, but I mean something that they can actually try out, and maybe by using it a little bit, they can start to discover what it does, so they're not always running back to town and trying to find a mage that can cast Identify on it or whatever. And the same thing with the cursed. A lot of the times, it's curses that are going to be fun for me, you know, that'll be good, fun to describe or fun to watch them do. Not to the level of a girdle of masculinity, femininity fun, but you know, fun to the sense of they're going to think that it's doing one thing when it's, you know, it's all about what's going to be the most fun in the adventure usually.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree with that to a certain extent. I think when I really started DMing a few years ago with my group, and because I think it was been such a long time since I DM'd, so I kind of had to go back on a learning curve. I think I was a little bit too giving as far as the magic items were.
And now
I'm at the point to where it's, you know, whatever comes up, comes up. If it's good, bad, oh well. You know, if that deck of many things does show up, well, I kind of look at it like this way. This is, it's Pandora's box. you know. So
wow,
you got a bunch of characters, you know, and this lands in their lap. I mean, let the fun begin. So at least fun for me as a DM, because, you know, I'm devious, so that's how I roll.
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of the fun comes out of trying to figure out what the thing is. And there's a certain part to giving a magic item that's necessary, or at least is going to make the rest of the adventure easier and or just work better. And I think that there's a lot to be said for that. I mean, maybe that kind of goes back to, you know, I complain a little bit about people playing some games now as if they were playing Warcraft or some, or a video game.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I have to be honest. Sometimes there's some things that are, for me, influenced by the text adventure games of the 80s. The idea that if you're going to need this item later on, you know, you better make sure that you pick it up, because it's going to be an important thing two levels down.
How about you, Vince? Do you kind of do that from time to time, or how's your take on that?
On what? No, I'm kidding. I just thought that was so funny.
So, but let me explain. Magic
items.
Yeah, I know. I was kidding.
Podcast, it's about first edition. Oh. It's a game that was started back in the 70s. If you want, I can send you some stuff.
Oh, could you mail me some stuff, please? Yeah, definitely. I'd like to know more about this and this podcast I'm hearing about too. I like to make up my own items, and I don't really follow the recipes in the book. I like to just let it flow creatively, and if this is what I want for the game, this will be the goal. Like if I want to make a +2 sword with fire on it or something, I'm not going to follow the book. I'm going to make up my own stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they did, so you should. So should you.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever fits my campaign at the time, that's what I do.
So, cool. So I mean, so for Emil's question, I think the answer is really that you shouldn't be sticking to just one or the other. That it's really important to mix it up, and in my opinion, do it to create the most sense of fun in the game. I like your idea of just really seriously being random and rolling to see what's going to happen. And then Vince, you know, with you're saying to just go completely in the opposite direction and actually create it from scratch. So you've got three ways to look at it.
Sweet. All right.
Dude.
Yeah, dude. Nah, Nick.
Sweet.
Nick, you're the... Yeah, stop it. Nick, you're
That's
next.
That's not me.
That was not Nick this time, folks. Nick, it's your turn now. You're up.
Oh, okay. Well, we have Brady, and he writes in, and he has some comments about when we were talking about props. And Brady writes, "Hi, guys. I was catching up on your latest podcast and felt that I would share my experiences with regards to the use of props. I am a firm believer that a good prop can really enhance the game, but at the same time that they must be used sparingly." And I agree with him. "In my 25-plus years as a DM, I have often used the trusty scroll or map, but every once in a while I have really liked to push the envelope. An example of this is from a campaign that I had decided to surprise my players by launching them into an adventure that was set in the late 1800s. Pretty cool. Hmm. For this, they would not be playing their regular characters, but ones of my creation. In order to smoothly enact the transition from present day to 1888, I created a prop. The team came into possession of the diary of one of the 1800s characters. For this, I got an old-looking hardback notebook and wrote the opening entries, which set up the background and provided enough information to intrigue the group. They realized that as the adventure played out, they would uncover the facts that would have relevance on the main present-day campaign."
Cool.
That's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Plus, the players can carry that around with them, so they can keep referring back to it, and different things are going to unfold as the game goes through. I really like it.
Yeah, that's very cool. Thanks, Brady. And
Nick, this is kind of like what you were actually asking about on the, I don't remember if it was on Facebook or the forums the other day, about creating tomes.
That was me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Vince.
Or Vince.
Yeah.
Vince was asking
about it. I was wondering about that, because I want to create some props for some of my games. This is a good idea.
Yeah, and a lot of people had good suggestions for you, so.
Definitely. So,
yeah, it's very cool, Brady, and anybody else has more stuff that they use in their games, props like that, let us know.
Yeah, and you know what? For the listeners, it'd be really great if people could send some photos of their props in, because that's, you know, these descriptions are wonderful. I'd love to actually see what they look like and, you know, hear people talk about that.
Yes.
So since we have forums, if anybody wants to go, you know, set up a forum, just a props forum, so people can go and give tips and hints about that sort of thing.
All right, yeah, well, I'll put in the props forum.
Yeah.
That works.
Cool.
All right, the last one I'll take comes from John Koss, writes in and comments with, "I enjoy your podcast quite a bit. And I'd also like to give you praise that there is no foul language said during this podcast, which enables me to listen, I guess, to the podcast at work and at home with my kids worry-free. Most podcasts drop F-words and S-words all the time. I just wanted to thank you all for this. Well, first I'd like to say you're welcome, and we try to be, you know, keep this as a family podcast. And Jason and I went out of our way when we first started this podcast to say that we would never do anything like that. And if anything came close to that, we would either beep it out or we would blurb it out. And I'm going off radio broadcasting rules from over 10 years ago when I was in radio. Jason, editing magazines, knows the rules there as well. So, and Nick has curbed his language as well. So we're doing our job.
What do you mean by that?
Nothing at all, my friend.
Holy expletive deleted, Batman.
But yes, we try to keep this family oriented. So, like, I think Jason has said once or twice, so you can sit back at work and listen to this or with the kids.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, we're a show about games.
Yeah.
So it should be fun for everybody.
Yeah, we're not here to do F this or F that.
Not throwing the F bomb.
Exactly. Yep. All right, cool.
I'm so tempted to go back and edit this thing with about 100 beeps in the middle of that whole bit. Like this week in unnecessary censorship.
Yeah, really.
Okay.
All right, let's head into Table Manners this week.
Typical. Of all the evil creatures in the world, I'd like to find one with table manners.
What, are you kidding me? I spent years cultivating the worst table manners on the planet.
Table manners.
Table manners. This one is going to be by a listener request for an evil campaign, as Dr. Evil would say. And this one came from Orion Megadon, I think that's how it's
Orion.
Orion Megadon.
Again with the names. I love this.
Yeah.
This is good. That better be a real name. Orion Megadon.
It's kind of cool.
I was just at a baby shower earlier today, and the mom to be put a thing up on the wall letting everybody suggest names for the baby. They're not going to go with either of mine.
Which were?
They're not going to go with Rock Bloodspawn. And they're also not going to. Right. They're not going to take Awesome Turbo Laser Beam. That's not going to be one. But here's the scary true story. From that board, the mom-to-be has actually kind of decided that Odin is a pretty good name.
Odin?
Odin, as in as in Odin One Eye. Yeah.
As in the god Odin.
Yeah,
Yes. So, Orion Megadon could be the real name.
Tops Raceland.
Almost. Yeah. Well, the ultimate one is Max Powers, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Anyway, Mr. Megadon writes in, "I was wondering if you have covered or are planning to cover the subject of playing evil aligned characters. My group always seems to gravitate to playing evil, and I wonder if we are out of the ordinary. Can you maybe give us pointers on being an evil yet triumphant group of PCs as opposed to the stereotypical backstab each other and we all die PCs?" I've always maintained that evil parties will save the kingdoms for greed or fear just as well as good PCs do it to be nice. We always had, a party contract which was brutally enforced or broken at various times. We also were friends, so no one took it personally when the PC died at the hands of another. I'm looking forward to your gentlemen's, thoughts on this matter.
Gentlemen?
Which gentleman is he talking about? So first up, how do you play an evil PC? Is it semi-evil or quasi-evil?
Well, you know, I never play evil PCs for myself, but I really agree with the thing he said right in the middle there, which is that an evil party is going to save a kingdom for greed just as well as a good PC does it, you know, because it's the right thing to do. Because the idea of evil as an alignment, to me, is not about the cartoonish, mustache twirler that does things to be evil. It's about being selfish and motivated by whatever's best for oneself and not ever worrying about the others. So if doing the best thing for themselves means occasionally, what do you call it, doing something just because it happens to also be good, you know, that's totally possible. Yeah. As an example, I'm reading a book right now that's talking about the occult history of Germany during the Nazi years, because they had a lot of like crazy occult things going on. And at one point, apparently, Aleister Crowley was in Berlin, and a group of stormtroopers stopped him from beating up his girlfriend.
Wow.
It's like, where's the good character?
Yeah.
But I mean, stopping somebody from beating up their girlfriend's a good thing. If you just said, hey, those soldiers just stopped that guy from beating up his girlfriend, they'd be like, oh, that's great. Oh, and they were Nazi stormtroopers and he was Aleister Crowley.
Well, you know what, though? I think you bring up a very interesting point on a macro scale when you're talking about nations and governments. Like, for example, like you're talking about Nazi Germany, they had law and order. They had to have law and order.
Yeah.
I think Nazi Germany is, in my opinion, a good example of a lawful evil government.
Oh yeah, I mean it's one of those kind of classic things when you're sitting around talking about alignments and nations and that kind of stuff. I think you're totally right.
And
so for how you play it as a PC,
yeah.
I mean, to bring it back to that, I guess, yeah, it's fine to play the PC that way as an evil character, but the first thing that I'd run into with this is that AD&D was not set up, it wasn't created with the intent that players would play evil characters on a regular basis, not out of any moral thing, because it's just a game after all, but you just don't have enough spells and magic items and monsters to fight for it to work so easily that way. So if you want to do it, you can absolutely do it, but you're going to do a lot more work as a DM just setting up the right kind of adventures for them.
Maybe. I think if you're going to do it right, if you were going to have a campaign where the players were going to be predominantly evil or all evil, that's how I would do it. I have never had a group where there was a mix of good and evilly aligned characters along the good-evil axis that ever worked. It has to be predominantly one or predominantly the other. I mean, other than that, it's going to end with a lot of character deaths. So, you know, we had a campaign where it was predominantly evil characters. You know, I think my character, my mage, he was chaotic neutral. So he was probably the only one who was not necessarily evil in the party. We had lawful evils. We had neutral evils. I think we had a true neutral. And chaotic neutral. So,
yeah,
for the most part, we still got things done. I mean, no one really necessarily backstabbed each other. But like you said, if it's to the evil player character's best interest to have the group or at least an individual in the group alive to help to get their own goals, yeah, of course that'll happen.
So. Yeah, I just think that when I think about the different alignments, I tend to think of the evil alignment in the way that I've seen a lot of people treat neutral. Yeah, I've seen a lot of people treat neutral as the alignment where, well, you know, you just kind of do whatever is best for you. But no, to me, that's really not what it's about. Neutral is the ones that are always trying to keep it in balance, whereas the evil characters are the ones that do whatever is best for them. So, I mean, in that sense, yeah, I guess you could really play a lot of evil characters, but I don't know. It doesn't appeal to me as a concept. You know, it's kind of the way that you see there's a lot of games that it's more fun to pick it up and play the baddies. But that kind of gets old after a little bit for me.
Yeah. No. I play evil characters quite a bit, and I have loads of fun playing it. Actually, I'm playing a difficult campaign right now. I was playing a lawful good paladin, which is kind of a twist for me. So it's,
wow.
And my group is one person is true neutral, another person is neutral good, and then I have a chaotic neutral nutball running around doing evil stuff that I can't prove at the time being, but I will, and I will get rid of him, and I will triumph over him, and show the good is all that is good and just. But normally, I generally lean towards the lawful evil side of things, to use the law in my evil ways.
Oh,
well,
sure.
I mean, do you think, to get to his other point, the stereotypical kind of backstabbing situation, do you think that that is the kind of thing that has to happen in an evil party?
I think not... the actual backstab is in like an actual backstab. No,
not literally, but I mean in general, the idea that
betrayal.
Yes, betrayal. Okay, that works better. I love the spur of the moment, write that note to the DM, thought of a great idea to how to just screw over the party or something like that, or screw over somebody when they think they got ahead on something. I've done this a couple times.
Heck, I've had that happen in good align parties. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, now that we're saying it this way, I think about it. I worked over on Madison Avenue for a few years at a major advertising company,
yes.
And pretty much every day was like that. So,
I would expect that in that business, yes.
You know, if I start thinking about what it's like to be in a party where every single one of them can't trust the other and it simply turns into a permanent backstabbing kind of power struggle, that just sounds like typical politics.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, all you'd have to do is go spend a little bit of time in the upper echelons of corporate America or down in, like, you know, D.C. around political types, and you'll pretty much see how a group of evil characters are going to play with each other. I'm just – it's true. It sounds funny,
saying,
but that's
– You're just saying.
I'm just saying.
You're just saying. I know.
I'm just saying.
All right, so
we need to comment to know that Jason's personal comments are not the all of the comments here on Roll for Initiative podcast. That's our disclaimer.
All right, the disclaimer is the comments by Jason are no longer condoned by RFI podcast. there you go, your disclaimer.
That sounds better.
Okay, so you know what I like to play mostly lawfully, but Jason, what do you generally gravitate towards when you're designing your character? What alignment do you gravitate?
You know, I really end up with chaotic good all the time.
Okay,
and maybe it's just that whole, you know, you kind of play what you know, and it seems to be the one that gives me the most latitude to play the way that I would really normally play it. You know, it doesn't stretch my role-playing abilities too far.
Okay, so Jason is chaotic good, I am lawful evil, and Nick, over to you.
Gosh,
Gosh is not an alignment, try again. No, I'm kidding.
You know, I played so many different alignments. I think the only two alignments I have not played is neutral evil and chaotic evil. I think I've played all the other alignments on in the alignment spectrum.
I think chaotic
as
evil
far
is
as
a
one
hell
I,
of alignment
I gravitate
playing.
Towards.
Yes.
I would say like lawful neutral, maybe even lawful evil.
Ooh.
So
and I do
play chaotic goods though. So
yeah. But like I was just trying to say that I think chaotic evil is a tough alignment to pull off sometimes.
I think so too. I have to agree. When you get to around neutral evil, the neutral evil and chaotic evil, I think are the two most difficult ones to play. It just along with even chaotic neutral because everybody plays them like an insane man. But
people take chaotic neutral and they play it like chaotic evil and they go, oh, I'm not evil, I'm chaotic neutral.
Right.
Like that
right.
movie we saw, Jason. Which you kept saying, I'm not evil, I'm chaotic neutral. You're evil.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, because I always think of the chaotic side of the alignment as being something like an artistic temperament or sort of a traveler type. You know, I think of Jack Kerouac as being a chaotic type. And that really appeals to me. You know, I think of the chaotic one as being...
Good.
Yeah, the chaotic is the free-spirited one. And so, you know, if you're playing it that way, you know, a chaotic evil character could be a really enjoyable... I mean, maybe Jack Sparrow is chaotic evil. Captain Jack Sparrow.
I would give him more chaotic good than anything else.
Okay, okay, well, in that case, all you need to do is push him a little bit onto the evil side. If he was looking out more for himself... Actually... All right, well, we've done the alignment thing before. I'm not going to speculate on it too much. I think he might be chaotic evil, but you guys think differently. That's okay.
I think he's more like chaotic neutral.
So we all have our own spectrum vision of Jack Sparrow. Who cares?
Right, exactly. I only watched the first movie, so I don't even know.
They're all good.
He also asks, you know, how? I guess his way says, how far should you go? You know,
how evil is evil? How much evil should you be?
Yeah, how evil is evil? I mean, I guess
you want to be
if
shocking.
If you're working for like Demogorgon, that might be pushing the envelope. I don't know.
You know, that's good because there's different ways to say why are you playing evil? Are you playing it because you've actually got some desire to spread evil throughout the land according to your deity? Which that's probably the best way to do it. That's probably the best valid way to do it.
Yeah.
Or are you playing evil in the sort of insane, twisted mind kind of evil, which is more insanity than actually evil?
Right. I guess when you look as far as you should go, and I guess it also ties in with if it's playable, is this might be a poor example of if you could play evil characters together in a group.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to use this example, but that's the only one that could pop into my head. The Legion of Doom.
I was just gonna ask if you were gonna say the Legion of Doom. Sure.
Minus Solomon Grundy and Scarecrow. I mean, there you go. There's a group of evil characters that work together with a certain goal. I mean, but I think in this case, if you use that as kind of a template, you know, you have to have someone who's very, very strong in charge.
I don't know. Chaotic evil has always been a tough alignment for me to play. Like, for example, we're gonna go to like a video game type reference type here. I'm playing Red Dead Redemption right now on PlayStation 3.
Okay.
And that's set in the Old West, so you can pretty much do whatever you want in the Old West. You can be an outlaw, right. You can be the good white hat guy, you can be the black hat bad guy, whatever. So I tried to do the outlaw, black hat, badass type guy, and it's really bothering me to do that because basically I could ride around the West, you find people hanging out in the West that do things for you, you do it for them, and then you could just blow them away and take it back. That's what a chaotic evil character would pretty much do.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I'm doing that. I give it to the stuff. They're like, oh, thank you. And I get on my horse right away, turn around, go, eh, whatever, bang, and just take it back from them. And it's just like,
yeah,
I sit there
and
going,
then you got to think about the consequences. If you were doing that in the game and the DM started saying, okay, your reputation is going to become known throughout the land,
right,
you might not do it so much. If it meant that you couldn't continue to do it as well.
Well, that's the problem in the game, and all of a sudden you would lose honor, and then you'd have marshals after you, and you'd be running around shooting marshals, and that happened to me, and I died, but anyway.
I don't know, it's just funny. There's a 40-foot Red Dead Redemption billboard right outside of my window, so.
Wow.
You know, I just thought of one excellent, good example of a evilly, I guess, aligned party, and it pulls off very well. There's a book I got like maybe 10, 15 years ago. Right. Author's name is Eve Forward, and the book is called Villains by Necessity.
Okay. Hmm.
And the plot of the book is, in this magical realm, good has won. Evil has been vanquished.
No.
And the last like band of evil characters or beings, they're on a quest to bring back evil into the world because there's too much good. It is an excellent book.
That sounds like a good book.
It's funny, and I think it's a really good example how an evilly aligned party can do something like that, and I think it'd be a real good premise. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Eve Forward and Villains by Necessity. I don't know if it's still in print. I have my copy, and I treasure it.
Make sure you send me the info so we can put it as a link on the
absolutely
on the show.
I'll see if there's I'm sure there's something on Amazon, and we'll put a link to the book.
It's on Amazon. All right, well, as we've done evil PCs in your campaign, tell us what you do in your campaign for evil and evil petting zoos and things like that, and RFI staff
evil petting zoos.
Yes.
Lasers on sharks.
No, Mr. Powers, we expect you to die. Anyway, let's go on to our next segment, bringing back an old segment from the past, and you'll just have to wait now. Ha.
Do you have any idea what you're talking about?
Why do I sound like I do?
Playing tips.
What are we bringing back from the dead today, Jason?
So it's the Stickler Spotlight, which I like. So that's good. I'm a Stickler, so I like that.
Yeah, you are.
But we're bringing back for this week's Stickler Spotlight the question of level limits.
Yes.
So, yeah, this is one we often hear about from people when they're first playing the game, running into this sort of thing.
Yes.
Level limits, it doesn't sound like too bad of a deal when you first get into it, finding out that you know you're not going to be able to make it past a certain level because you've chosen a non-human race. But, of course, then what happens if the party's continuing on and on and on, and you know you're stuck there and... you know, you're a halfling, and everybody else is, you know, whatever 18th level, and you're 6th level. So the question is: do you follow them? Are they needed? Should they be ignored or waived in certain cases?
Vince, all right, so here's, what do you think on that one?
Do I follow them? Nay. Are they needed? They probably are, and they probably served a purpose back then. I don't think they serve a purpose now, because I think it's just annoyance. Should they be ignored? Certainly. Should it be waived? Eh, why not? I feel, you know what, I know the reason they were put there. I know they were to balance the game out, make humans more, alluring, more playable.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Make it more human-centric.
Yeah, and I know they did that in the later editions by giving humans a bunch of stuff to make them seem like they're better. You know what? I just say, you know, just go with it. Who cares? I mean, so what? Who's to say that a dwarf can't go past level 9? I mean, why can't he? Because he just magically cannot? What prevents
him? Yeah, it's a tough one for me because, you know, I don't like game balance because I don't have a problem with game balance, but, you know, I don't like game balance for the sake of game balance.
Yeah.
I like it. Right. You know, if it actually comes out of things, that's great. But like you say, what is it about this halfling that makes him completely incapable of ever getting any better as a fighter than 6th level?
Exactly. There's no just other than Gary wrote in the book and said, "I declare."
Well, so but then there you get to the other side of things, which is I don't like breaking the system that works. The level limits. Well, first of all, the balancing thing, it's a whole thing about how first edition is balanced as compared to, say, maybe how the D&D systems were balanced in later years, is that it's balanced not necessarily on a at-the-moment sort of situation where, when we're all at third level, we're all doing about the same sort of thing. It's balanced over the lifespan of your character, you know, like a magic user who is completely useless at first level, but completely unstoppable at 12th.
Right.
And that's balance.
Right.
So, you know, here's the thing. I have an all-human campaign right now. Everybody, lucky for me, chose humans. So it's not coming up at the moment. And when I was a teenager, you know, I ignored the level limits because it was just no fun for anybody to get stuck back at a level. Don't think I would ignore them anymore.
No.
Well, because the fact is, this is the way the game's set up, and the one thing that you have as an advantage is the ability to be multi-classing. So perhaps you can't get above a certain level because of your race, but you do have the ability to go and train in something else, and suddenly to have to really be a army of one in a lot of ways that a human can't do.
Well, no. Okay, so you're saying you can multiclass and do this and that, but why can't a human multiclass? Why can't...
Well, they can technically. They can dual class. Humans can dual class.
Why can't they multiclass?
That's similar to multiclassing. Well, so
yeah, but why
can't
they
multiclass?
I think
that's a good balancing act right there.
What's preventing them from doing this? What's preventing a halfling, like Jason said, from going up a level? There's no argument on that. Why can't a halfling hang around in a party for, I don't know, say 10 years? He's 9th level, the human is 12th level. Why can't he learn over time to go do that class with that person? Because he's a halfling?
I'd say actually.
I think that's a circumstance that should be waived.
Well, no, I mean, some people are not... I mean, this is, you know, talking real life now. Some people are just not capable of ever learning or doing more than a certain thing. You just you know your limits. I like to go running, for example. I like, you know, I go out in the morning and I run, you know, maybe a couple, 3 miles in the morning. I'm probably never going to run a marathon.
No, all right.
And
okay.
I certainly am never going to go and win a cross-country race.
Right.
And it wouldn't even matter how hard I trained or whatever I did. I mean, those are just my limits. It's just what I can do.
I'm gonna disagree with you there, Jason. If you spent every day training to do something across country marathon, you'd be able to do it.
Okay. I mean, within certain limits, but you know, I'm going with athletics here because it's an easy one to think of. You know, there's any number of athletes out there that I don't think that anybody could be Yao Ming. I mean,
okay,
I think
that
only Yao Ming can really be Yao Ming. I mean, sure, there's going to be other people who can reach those levels, but some people, you know, just never.
Yeah, like Michael Jordan.
Not anybody
in baseball.
Can be Thelonious Monk. Not everybody can be Albert Einstein. I mean, everybody has certain things they can and can't do.
That's a good analogy with the sports. I mean, a good example is like, you know, you might have, you know, like an American football. You got guys. Great running
American
backs.
Football. Somebody's been watching the World Cup.
No,
oh.
I don't.
Oh,
I don't
we caught you, Nick. We caught you.
Oh, we
I don't
got you.
Watch that stuff. I'm just making up knowledge for our international listeners.
Yeah, sure.
Yes,
we know it's on mute in the background. It's okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, in football, you know, you have running backs and quarterbacks, and they're really good at what they do. But some of these guys, as we know, they golf. Do they professionally golf? No, because they stink at golf. They just golf because they golf. So they're really, really good at football, but, you know, they'll take up golfing and they're just not that great at it. Like you said, there are certain limits. There are certain things that people do really, really well. So I think that does kind of play into it. And I was also thinking about this, about the level limits things not too long ago. I was thinking about a way of running I was going to do a whole new Greyhawk campaign. And I was actually kicking around the idea of like having no level limits for elves and dwarves and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, how does that throw off the game balance? And I'm like, well, it really doesn't, but what's going to make it enticing for humans to play a human character, you know?
Yeah.
One of the things I thought of is giving, and since I'm using the World of Greyhawk campaign setting, I broke it down to where, you know, the four main racial subgroups of humans, give them attribute bonuses.
Yeah.
If you're a mixture of, like, say, Sewell and Flan, you get a plus one here and a plus one here to your attributes.
A lot of people do that, yeah.
Yeah. Or, and also, I also did a thing to where if you're from, like, a particular kingdom, maybe you get a plus one to hit with certain types of weapons, because that's what the kingdom mostly uses in their armies. And but so that's another way, as a human.
Human.
As a human, yes.
We waiting for that one too, Jason?
You are human.
Yeah. As a human, that would be more appealing to a character, to a player, to play human where there's no level limits. Give something similar similar attributes to humans as demi-humans have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, humans might not get infravision, but you know what? Maybe they get a plus one bonus to their con or for being a particular human subrace, you know, or plus one bonus to their intelligence for being a particular human subrace. You know, stuff like that.
You could keep on if we were looking at it purely from why can't an elf be a 10th level fighter? Well, for that matter, you could say, why can't an elf be a cleric? I mean, do elves not have the ability to be clerics? You're right. You could definitely do that. And I think, you know, that's probably a good argument for why some later editions changed, you know, and got rid of some of those things. So you have to make a decision at some point. Do you want to keep this in the AD&D rules? Or do you want to house rule it to a point that I don't want to say you're playing a different game, but it feels better to me to just go ahead and stay with what the rule sets you know were about to begin with. And you know, being an 11th level magic user is not exactly a disadvantage.
No,
you know, that's not a weak character. And if you've if your characters are playing up to 15th and 20th level, you know, maybe you're playing a very different game at that point, and a 15th or 20th level character should be facing challenges that are more on the level of nation building and running armies
and plane hopping and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So I can understand, you know, from a logical point of view, why it just doesn't make any sense to stop them there. Yeah. But just in terms of the fact that we've got volumes of rule books that are set up and all things around the fact that this exists, it creates too many possible breakages for me to want to go there.
So we agree to disagree?
I think so. I think it will work if you give similar racial modifiers to humans. So
yeah, but then
all different races have it.
But I don't want to have humans with infravision.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm talking like, you know, like a tribute bonus is when you create the character. You know, something like that.
Yeah. Then why? I mean, I want the races to be different. These are fantastic magical creatures. Well, not magical creatures, but you know what I mean. They're fantastic creatures. I want them to be different.
Mythical
creatures. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. All right. Okay. Well, let's call this quits here because we can all go off on our own ways on this one forever, pretty much. And we don't want people to turn the podcast off, so tell us what you do, rfistaff@gmail.com, and we will head into Creature Feature Theater.
Creature Feature Theater.
So, who's running the Creature Feature Theater this week?
That would be me, Nick. AM Nick is doing the Creature Feature tonight. And like I said earlier in the podcast, we'll be using to kind of generate the whole dungeon here with our special creature. We are going to be using the dungeon deck, and I already pre-pulled the cards. And I
you
read
did all that work.
Yeah, it took me a whole 30 seconds to do, and that's so why cool. It's such a cool product.
So cool.
I'm really pushing this product. I think it's very cool. So we have two characters, and I want you guys go ahead and introduce your characters and, you know, what they are.
Hi. Oh, sorry. I'm playing Grimthar, a human fighter.
Grimthar, the human fighter.
The human fighter. He is level 6. He looks like he's got some pretty good stats. 1840 for his strength, 14 for his dex, 15 con, intelligence 10, wisdom 11, and then 12 for his charisma. He's got 54 hit points, and he's pretty good. I got a good suite here going. Jason, what are you playing?
All right. Well, you know what? I've got Cedric, who's a half elf, multi-classed.
Oh, mm-hmm. Not the entertainer.
Ha. and he's a. First of all, Nick, kudos on the well fleshed out characters here. Much better than I gave you guys.
No problem.
So, yeah. Although I do see at the bottom it was created by something. But, all right.
We won't talk about that.
We don't say a word. Okay, so Cedric is a half-elf cleric mage who has reached the 6th level in both cases. Chaotic good. Thanks. That's nice.
No problem.
But I do have a little bit of a question for you. He's 17?
I'm sorry. He should be like maybe about 10 years more than that, probably about 27.
Yeah, he's definitely not 17, but that's okay.
Yeah, so, I forgot to change that.
Yeah, that's all right. So
he learns quickly.
You know, he's half elf size, 5'7", you know, slim build and all that sort of thing. He's got a nice rounded set of stats here, good high wisdom and high dexterity and low charisma. So again, fits me perfectly. Oh, okay. Looking good.
Immediately I cut him down. No, I'm kidding.
You're in your low charisma.
He wastes him with my crossbow. He wastes him with his crossbow.
All right.
If anything, 13, 16, 11, 16, 17, 12, if anything, I've got kind of better than average scores here, so that's pretty nice.
Yeah. And I did use the appendix of the DMG to generate the stats. So that's why they're probably a little bit slightly higher.
I got to tell you, just on a slight tangent, at that same baby shower I was at today, I ended up getting a discussion with somebody who's also a gamer but hasn't played first edition, and you should have seen her jaw drop when she said, "You roll your stats? How do you win?"
That's right, we roll our stats.
Anyway.
Alright, so without further ado,
Cedric and Grimthar.
Grim.
You do know each other. Let's
What's
just
up, Grim?
Say...
Yo, brother.
All right. Let's just say that you got separated from the rest of the group.
Who?
Us.
Oh, us.
Yes,
okay.
You two got separated from the rest of your party, and you're out in a thunderstorm. It's getting very late at night in a thunderstorm in the forest. Lightning flashing across the sky. Is obviously no ordinary storm that you've run into. And just a little ways ahead, you do see an entrance to somewhere. And both of you think it's probably a pretty good idea that might be the place to take shelter.
Hey, I think that's a good idea. What do you think?
This storm is terrible. Let's take shelter in that cave. What could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah,
that's
really.
Right. Well, you get to the entrance, and you would say it's like on a hilly, rocky hillside.
So we're in the forest, and we've come to a hillside, and there's a cave in
the
hillside?
Yes, and you're kind of getting out of the forest a little bit, but there's
what
still
time
some
of day
trees
is it right
on
now?
These rocky hills and stuff like that. Like you would probably see like in the Appalachians, per se.
What time of day?
What time? Yeah, what time of day?
It is twilight, nightfall.
Okay.
I sparkle. Oh, sorry.
Not that twilight.
Oh, okay.
And this entrance, it appears to be a stone door.
Oh, is it?
So it's carved
from solid stone.
Oh, okay. I thought it was just an open cave entrance.
Hmm. No. The entrance is a stone door in the side of this rocky hill.
Okay, so just before we do a single thing, going in here and looking around or anything at all, the first thing, Grimthar, this clearly is not the kind of thing when you're in the wilderness and we run into a stone door that it's usually not a friendly place.
No.
So the first, I have the ability to cast negative plane protection, and I think that it would be a good idea to it'll last for at least 6 turns, which is plenty of time, so I'm going to cast that on both of us.
Okay. All right. So you cast your spell. Go ahead and track the time for that, if you would, for your spell duration.
Yes, it's going to be good for 6 turns, so that's an hour.
Yeah, plenty of time. Yeah.
I memorized the prayer twice, so I'm going to be using that once for myself and once for Grimthar.
Excellent. Very good.
Very positive.
So, either one of you open the stone door. It appears there's no hinges on this side.
Let's look around before we do.
Is there handles on the door?
There appears to be two handles on the door. Around the stone door appears to be worked stone that the stone doors are set in.
So it would swing outward or inward?
Inward.
Inward.
Hmm.
Okay.
Towards the unknown area
of doom.
Just looking around the area, does there... Or before we try to open it or anything, just as a experimental kind of push on it, indicate that it feels very closed or like it just would open easily.
It's.
I'm not trying to actually open it yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's just judging the pressure on the door.
It seems solid. Definitely seems solid.
Okay.
Doesn't appear it's not going to give too easy.
So maybe some good pushing will open this door.
Yeah, okay. Maybe a good push by someone very strong would definitely push in one of the sides of these doors. It is a double door, by the way.
Okay, I'm going to look above the doors. Does anything look like it could get loose and fall on us if we open the doors?
Doesn't appear so. There is kind of like a slight mantle overhang of stone. Maybe it comes out about a half a foot. But other than that, doesn't look like anything would actually fall upon you.
All right.
You know, I don't think that just opening the door is going to set off a lot of traps, but we don't have a thief with us to actually try to figure that out. So it might be a good idea to try and see if we can open the door without going in ourselves right away.
You want to just shove the door open?
You probably could have given it a good shove. You probably could, Grimthar.
All right.
I have an idea, and Grimthar, tell me if this is...
You can probably could put like both hands on it and give it a good shove.
Grimthar, if you want to give it a shove and just go for it and see what happens, that's fine. I do have a way that I think we could probably open the door without having to touch it, though.
What's that?
I am able to cast Enlarge. And if I were to cast Enlarge on the stone door, it would probably break the frame around it and fall down.
That may cause a cave-in.
Well, then we know that it's not a good idea to go in.
Okay, can I use Cedric as a battling ram against the door?
Well, what's your max press?
No. I'm just going to shove the doors open.
Okay, why don't you either left or right, or you could do both at the same time.
I'm going to do the left door. The left door.
Okay, the left side. All right, give me an open doors roll, please.
What do I need to roll here? Let's see.
Believe a d20.
Yeah, it's open doors 12. And 7.
Yeah, no problem. As you step up to the doors, you say to Cedric, hey, watch this. Put both hands, wham, that side of the door comes open. As soon as you open the door, a damp, musty smell permeates.
Oh, Cedric.
Damp and musty. He soiled his armor.
Yeah, can we see inside the tunnel area? Cave, I mean?
It is dark. The only thing you see with a flash of lightning behind you, and maybe about 20 feet in, is about a 20-foot wide hallway.
Do we have torches? Yes, I think we do.
I'm pretty sure you do. You have your standard dungeoneering equipment. Torches, backpack, 50-foot of rope.
Okay, I think before doing that, though, I would rather find a good-sized rock. You know, if there's any sitting around that I could pick up. You know, nothing too heavy, but something.
Oh, yeah, there's bits of shale all around you.
Okay, I'm going to do that. I'm going to cast Continual Light on it.
Okay, cast Continual Light on a bit of shale. Very good.
Yeah, and toss it in ahead of us.
Okay, about how many feet?
I'll toss it in maybe about 20 feet.
All right, you toss it in 20 feet.
Exactly.
Exactly 20 feet. Excellent.
To the foot.
Yeah, we'll say approximately. And up ahead, it appears to be what looks like maybe an abandoned temple.
Okay, so describe the area from where we can see. I'm mapping.
From what you could tell, it's a very strangely constructed room. I would say on your side, if you want to use the doorway that you came in, that's the south end, going north. It goes in 30 feet, and it's 20 feet wide. It opens into a rather large area. I would say, and it's 1, 2, 3. It's like a five-sided room with the short side of the room to you.
Okay.
And
five-sided room, that's ominous.
Yes.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, it's got five sides. So yes. Think of the short side as yours, and that's 40 feet wide. Then it goes off on a 45 to the left and right, 40 feet. And then both of those sides go north 50 feet. And then that's probably about as far as you could see.
Okay.
And in this room, not only is it kind of damp and musty, but a strong, spicy smell lingers in the air. There are benches against the walls.
Can we tell where the smell's coming from?
It seems to be coming all over the room.
Okay, permeates the room.
Yes, along with the damp and mustiness.
So I'll take it we entered?
Well, that's what's kind of coming out of the room right now, as far as the scents, the smells.
So, you want to try going in?
We might as well. So we'll step in just as far as the glowing rock is.
As the glowing stone? Very good. All right.
So you go in, and now you can see the back wall. It goes, I would say, 20 feet in from either side.
Mm-hmm.
And then turns back north each side 20 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And it completes a square going across 40 feet. And in the back there, if you pick up the stone and kind of wave it around a little to get a mm-hmm. better look at things, and along with this thunder and lightning crashing behind you, and the storm is even getting worse, you would say that kind of niche to the back of this room,
mm-hmm.
it appears to be, in the back, there is a altar. And then back behind the altar, you could barely see it. There's two other smaller niches in the walls. And it appears to be like maybe a couple of maybe skeletons standing in the niches.
Okay. Let me see here. I'm just looking for the distance on my detect magic before I use this.
I would say from where you are right now, it's about 10, 20, 30. It's about 100 feet away from where you can see.
Okay, so I need to get within about 60 feet of this before I'll be able to detect magic.
So probably about the middle of the room.
Yeah, so Grimthar, if you can cover me a bit here, I'm going to creep forward detecting magic towards the altar and especially around the skeletons in the alcoves.
All right, so I take out my winter blanket and I put it around him.
Right.
Okay.
I'm covering him.
Right.
I go, there you go, cover, buddy.
Not that kind of cover.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Now, you do notice as you walk further in that there are other exits to this room.
Uh-oh.
Where are they?
There are four exits. One to the northwest, one to the northeast, one to the southwest, and one to the southeast. The southwest and southeast exits are 20 feet wide. Mm-hmm. And the northwest and northeast ones are 10 feet wide.
Okay. So I'm going to just turn in a slow circle around the room. From the center here, my detect magic should be able to reach all of the edges. And I'm just going to turn in a slow circle around detecting magic as I turn all the way around.
Okay. Let's see here. Wow. All right. You do detect magic. It seems to be coming from the altar area.
Okay.
Surprise.
Not sure exactly if it's on the altar or in the altar, but yes, there is a strong presence of magic coming from the altar area.
Is there any?
And you're standing in the middle of the room, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. You pan around with your magical stone, as you turn all the way around and then back towards the altar,
mm-hmm.
you see both skeletons start to move towards you. They jerkily move out of their niches, and there's a deep moan that comes from them. And as they moan, you see within their mouths and eye sockets, there are writhing green and pus-like worms writhing inside their mouths and eye sockets.
Yeah.
So I need a roll for initiative, please.
We're already here. You want us to give our what we're doing this round before we roll?
Yes, please, if you would.
All right, I'm going to turn them. I'm going to try to turn
them. You're going
to
attempt the turn. Okay. And you are 6th level, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Go ahead and roll, and well, you know what? I'll roll it, and I'll let you know if you succeeded.
Aww.
Or you know what? I'll let you roll. I'll be a good guy. Yay. I'll trust you. You roll it.
Actually, I'm still looking for my turning table.
I got it right here. I got it right here.
What do I need to turn them?
You just let me know what number, and I'll let you know if it succeeds.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Roll it.
No. Go ahead.
No, tell me the number.
Roll for me. Just go.
Okay. All right, I'll roll it for you. Unfortunately, you brandish your holy symbol, and they seem to
somewhat cackle.
Hmm.
Kind of what did I roll?
A dry cackling noise coming from them as you try to turn them.
You know what? This is good, because I don't know what I rolled, so I don't know if it was because I didn't roll well enough or if it's because they can't be turned.
Well, you so just said... Good. Yeah, well... what I
no,
rolled,
that's good. That's why I said go ahead and roll, because you're right. I shouldn't know.
Yeah. And doesn't, and you can't understand why that your god has failed you, but they very unusual undead creatures coming towards you. So let's go ahead and roll for initiative then.
All right, so, I'll roll it up.
Yeah, go ahead, Vince.
Two.
I rolled a three. That's... You guys go first.
What?
Well, we already know what I did.
Yes.
So, Vince?
I'm going to take my bastard sword.
Yes.
And run out the door. No, I'm kidding. I'm going to attack the nearest skeleton.
And leave Cedric behind. What a very brave warrior you are.
Yes, I'm very brave. Cedric the war... No. I attacked the nearest one to me.
Okay. All right. We'll just call that one...
One.
Undead creature number one, and then undead creature number two.
And all right. Let's go for the roll. And here's the roll, and it is... a 20! Yes! Aha! I crush him.
You rolled a 20, really.
Natural 20. Yes, sir.
Okay, you hit.
I would hope so.
Go ahead and roll your damage.
Let's see, damage. This is considered medium.
They are medium creatures.
Medium creatures. And, of course, one. Yay. And I'm rolling 2d4, folks. 4. 5. Plus 4. 9 total.
All right.
So doubled.
Did 9 points of damage to undead creature number 1. Very good. All right.
Out of character, is that because of the skeleton feature, or is that because you're not doubling?
Actually...
Or is it part of the creature that you can't tell us?
What is part of the creature?
Is this something of the creature you can't tell us because of the segment? In other words,
as you close on the creature, you notice it's not... as much as a skeleton as it kind of looks like it's almost a mummy looking like creature.
Hmm.
It's got tatters and rags on it. It's a bit mummified, but these green looking maggot like creatures rolling around its eye sockets and mouth and nose.
I guess my question to you was, were you counting the natural 20 in your game, or you're not counting that for anything?
Oh no, I count a natural 20 as a hit.
Nothing else.
Double damage or something like
that? Yeah, I don't know what you're using with your game for.
No, I'm not going to do double damage or anything like that.
Boo.
Sorry.
I saved my 20 for another game.
Maybe for a later podcast. All
right.
So, anyway, I guess, and you did your action.
I tried to turn them.
Cedric, you tried to turn them.
That's what I tried to do.
Now it's their attack, and your armor class there, Grimthar?
I'm trying to figure it out from the sheet. Natural.
I've got Thacko here. Oh, there you go.
Zero. I think your armor class is zero, Grimthar.
Oh, yeah, okay, when it's over on the other side there. Yeah, final, it says zero. Yeah, got it.
Okay, your armor class is zero, so I will go ahead and roll here.
Okay.
I got a 17.
Miss...
And I just hit you.
Boo.
For 4 points of damage. And I got to roll for another attack. It appears that as he swings both of his fists down upon you on the side of your arm, he turns his head towards you and a maggot shoots right out of its mouth towards you.
Ow.
And just whips by your ear.
Hmm. And hits Cedric. No, I'm kidding.
No. Well, we'll see if it hits Cedric. Cedric, the other one, undead creature number 2, staggers towards you, and he tries to have a crushing blow upon you. And your armor class is, sir?
It's 2.
Armor class 2. I rolled an 18. That is a hit. And you were hit for a whopping 1 point of damage. He just glances right off your shoulder. But As he opens his jaw, a maggot shoots out at you.
Mm-hmm.
And it just misses you as well.
Right by me. Where does the maggot go?
It kind of whizzes by you and flops down on the ground, wiggles a little bit, and dies.
Okay. Okay.
That wasn't very nice.
Can you describe these creatures again? I mean, just sure. A little bit more detail.
Sure. They have... I'll read it right out of the book. Ghastly undead appears animated putrid corpses with fat green worms crawling in and out of all their skull orifices.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like when they attack, both arms come right down upon you.
Okay.
All right.
And
are they wearing anything?
Tatters of clothing, strips of cloth. They look semi-mummified.
And are they carrying weapons, or they're just attacking?
No, they're just using their fists to hit you and these maggots that shoot out of their heads.
Okay. Okay.
Both of you, when you got hit, you know, as it hit, it felt like when the blow struck, it feels like that the blow, as you see it, it starts to slightly turn a strange color, like almost immediately becoming gangrenous in a way.
I don't know.
Wait. So the blow that hit me is turning gangrenous.
It seems to be putrefying a little bit. Both of yours, actually.
Okay. All right, so on this next turn, I'm going to actually step back and cast Cure Disease on... I'm going to cast it on Grimthar.
Okay. All right. You want to roll initiative this time?
Yeah, sure. Jason, you roll this time.
All right. Let's see. We've got a...
I got a five.
Boom.
Ooh. Tie. Okay. Weapon speed.
They'll actually get it because they're using natural weapons. They're using their fists.
Right, they will.
So, as you're trying to back away, the one that is upon you tries to strike you again and misses.
Excellent.
As soon as you back away, his fist come down and he goes, howls in a fit of rage.
Excellent.
But.
Oh my gosh.
Howls, a maggot hits you right dead on the face.
Bum, bum,
bum. Okay. Sorry, this was stupid of me to cast Cure Disease. I just realized how long it takes to cast this thing.
Yeah.
It takes an entire turn to cast this. That's it for me for the rest of the encounter, probably. I can always stop myself.
Well, you can stop yourself.
I've wasted it, but I will do something else next round.
Yeah, that's fine. Your spell goes fizzle, obviously.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You can... stop that action and do what you need to do. And as that this maggot lands right next to your eye, it is starting to burrow into your skin.
Oh, that's a bad thing.
Yeah. You could say that again. All right. Next round, I'll get back to you on that one. Okay, Grimthar?
Oh, well, I'm going to just...
Still attacking you.
I'm going to bash at the one in front of me, I guess.
All right.
How much I can really can do.
I believe he just hit you right on the nose.
Damn it.
For 2 points of damage. And that wound seems to be putrefying as well. And now another maggot shoots out of his eye socket this time. And that hits and lands right on your cheek.
Can I try ripping it off on my... Oh, I can't. I already tell what I was going to do.
Next round, you could do that for your action. And it feels like that is starting to burrow into your skin. Or you could do that this action if you so choose. You know, if you don't want to attack, if you want to rip that thing right out of you, you can.
Oh, yeah. I think that'd be the natural course of things. If something hits my face, I'm going to reflexively try to rip it off.
Okay. Very well. As soon as it hits, you go... By the gods! And rip that thing right off, and it flies to the ground.
I stomp on it.
Very good. You stomp it, squish it, and it makes a noise.
Ha-ha.
Seems that you still have one on you. You just stopped casting your spell, but Cedric. But next round, if you so choose, your action could be to take the maggot off your face.
Well, the only thing I can do is pull this off my face. I don't need something burrowing into my brain.
All right. So initiative again?
Yes.
All right.
2.
I rolled a 3. So you gentlemen go first.
Okay, so you're going to let us still get any attack in while I'm pulling out a maggot?
Let me think on that.
Is it going to take the whole round, or could I maybe, you know, lose the initiative and still, you know, pull it out and still be able to come back at him with something?
I will allow you to go ahead and pull the maggot off and just throw it down. You won't be able to stomp on it. And if you want to try to make an attack after he hits you, yes.
Okay.
All right. So, all right. Right now, you pull the maggot off and throw it to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess it'll be I'll roll the attack on you, see if he hits. And he blows it, misses again.
Mm-hmm.
Let's check for another maggot flying out of his nose.
A booger maggot.
Yes. He goes, and that goes whizzing by your shoulder. So neither a maggot or a blow from the creature. So now you could at least take a decent swing against this thing. And what are you using?
I'm using my +2 magical quarterstaff.
All right. Very good. Go ahead and roll to hit.
Okay. 14. So 16. Do I have any other bonuses? Attack adjustment? No. Okay, so 16.
All right, you do hit. Go ahead, and that's a medium creature. Roll damage.
Okay, so let's see here. I've got 5 points of damage.
5 points. Okay. All right. Okay, very good. Grimthar. You're going to go whack this thing again in the head?
Yes.
All right, go ahead, whack away.
15. Stop laughing at that.
Yes. With
right,
your
family
sword.
Program.
Let's keep this clean, gentlemen.
Yes,
you do hit. Go ahead and roll damage for this creature.
Okay, I'm going to roll damage of 2d4.
Okay.
3, 6, and 10 total.
10 points. Wow, very good.
Aha.
Nice.
This, I would say, as you hit this thing again with your bastard sword, you take a good, you know, chunk, a few ribs out of the thing, and they fall to the ground. So, excellent blow. But he's going to trade blows with you. And he hit.
I know this is a family podcast, but still, come on.
Stop it. Let's keep it clean. And he hits you. I rolled a 19. He hits you for 4 points of damage.
What is it with playing this game and you revert back to being 12? I don't know.
Exactly, right?
And that wound seems to be putrefying as well.
Ugh.
And I am
sorry about wasting that cure disease that we probably need later.
Maggot flies out of this thing's ear, and it lands upon you.
Out of its ear?
Right on your neck. Oh, and you're so lucky. But it's feels like it's going to start to burrow into your neck right now.
Oh my god. It's like the Wrath of Khan here.
Yes. The wrap around the cerebral cortex.
Khan!
All right, new round. Go ahead, roll a niche.
Jason. Okay, well, how close are they to each other right now?
They're side by side, pretty much.
Okay.
Since you're side by side, one is evenly attacking as the other, you know, one-on-one combat here.
Okay. I'm going to be using a lightning bolt. Oh, I'm sorry. You rolled your initiative before saying what people do?
I'm sorry.
No, it's just, fine. I didn't know if you wanted to do it, which way you wanted to do it. That's fine.
I don't care. I mean, you're declaring that you're using a lightning bolt. That's fine.
Yeah, so let's hope I get a low enough initiative to get this thing to actually go.
I think you will.
Ah, 2.
Yeah, I rolled a 5. So
nice.
So I don't think you're going to have a problem.
What's the segments on the lightning bolt?
3 segments.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I checked this time beforehand.
You'll be fine.
Okay.
In fact, if you figure it right, they'll probably hit you as soon as the lightning bolt goes off. They're going to try to hit you at least.
Yeah. So they'll be hit with 6d6 damage. So let me get some d6s out here and let you know what just happened. Hang on a second.
All right, go.
All right, 4, 6, 10, 14, 18, 23 points of damage.
Really? Wow.
Yes.
And save for half, right?
Yes, save for half.
All right, let me see here. Your saving throws. I'm looking for the matrix for monsters. I forget where it is.
Mm-hmm.
All right, there's the attack matrix. Wait, they use the same as fighters. That's right.
Yeah.
Duh. Sorry out there on RFI land.
All right, real play is how it always goes.
Well, one blew it. You roll one. So he's taking full damage.
Yay.
Would you believe I rolled two ones? Oh, my gosh.
Yes, I believe it.
Both take max damage from the lightning bolt. Okay, turning's not going to work. Let's try a more direct approach. Zot.
And dear listener, we're only talking about a third level magic user spell here, so.
Yeah, at 6th level, though.
Yeah, I'm just saying, level limits, you know, who's talking about level limits? 6th level, and I'm dealing some serious damage, so there you go.
I know. There you go. So, the one that Vince was attacking, or Vince's character, Grimthar, he gets hit by the lightning bolt. He does a quick shake, and he blows apart into 100 pieces, and it's completely gone.
Yes. Where do the maggots go?
The maggots, as they burst out of the body of this creature, when they fall to the ground, in a few seconds, they just writhe and die.
How about the one on my neck?
On you, though, Grimthar?
Yes,
is still trying to burrow into your neck.
Well, okay. As my action now, I'm going to pull it out.
Okay, very good. You pull it out and throw it to the ground.
Stomp on it,
and stomp on it, and there it goes.
Uh-huh.
And that was 23 points, right?
Yes.
All right. The one that was on you, Cedric, is blackened and charred and everything.
Cajun.
It's Cajun now. Mm, yummy. Burnt off a few of these green maggots and all that, but yet it's just barely moving and lets out a low groan and moan. So, and it tries to attack you and misses. But let's try to see if a maggot flies out of its nose. Yes, it does. And it flops right on the end of your nose.
Ew.
Oh, man. And it's trying to burrow in. All right. Not really taking any damage, per se, from the maggots, but they're trying to burrow into your skin. So let's do
it. It's not the kind of thing you want to just let happen.
No. thing goes off in your head saying, very bad thing to me. All right, let's roll initiative again, gentlemen.
All right, my turn. 4.
Yeah. 4. I rolled a 4 as well.
Okay, so I guess he'd be going first with the weapon speed.
Yeah, because he's natural attacks.
Right.
Again, on Cedric, misses with his fist coming down right across your face. But let's see if another maggot flies out. No, maggot misses. Flies right by your ear.
Just a bit outside.
So,
question for you. I was detecting magic, was the magic that I was detecting on these creatures?
No, they were not.
All right, then I won't dispel magic. Okay.
Okay. All right, let's go ahead, roll for your attack there, if you so choose.
Me?
Either one of you. Now,
I guess Cedric, if you are you going to try to attack with a weapon now?
Yeah, I'm as long as I'm close in like this.
Yeah, he's right
you know
on
what?
You, Brad.
I think Burning Hands.
Ooh.
Gonna cast Burning Hands.
Yes.
Okay.
It's Burning Hands. I still have a feeling like fire and light type of attacks are going to be particularly useful.
Okay. And what's how, when does that go off?
It should be really quick. It's one segment. It's practically
okay.
instantaneous.
Yeah,
so I'm just shooting. I'm just getting close enough to. I don't think I really have to hit, do I?
I mean, no, you just cast your spell, and if it's in that radius, obviously it is. You go ahead and roll your damage.
Okay, so what is my damage in Burning Hands? I'm not actually sure what the damage is here.
It's like a 1d4, 2d4, something like that.
That's really odd. I always send out flames of jets, flame jets 3 feet in length, but... Oh, it just takes... So it takes 6 hit points of damage. No saving throws
okay.
possible. Because I'm a 6 level magic user, so six points of damage.
Okay. As you cast your spell and... flames shoot out the end of your hands and fingers. The creature is engulfed with flames, and the maggots burst and pop and sizzle, and it falls to the ground, and it and it starts to decompose.
Jiffy pop.
Yes.
Nice.
So both
what
of these creatures
just
have
defeat.
Yes. What was the creature?
Vince, you have any idea?
No clue.
Jason?
I am completely stumped.
All right, now, here's some vindication. This is actually one of my favorite creatures out of the Fiend Folio. The
nice.
Son of Caius.
Oh, yeah.
Son yep. of Caius.
Son of Caius.
Yes, exactly. Son of a Caius.
I'm going to start swearing like that in front of people, and they were going to really worry.
Well, let me tell you these things. They were originally created by an evil high priest by the name of Caius. And eventually these creatures started to multiply. Oh, dang it. Oh, yeah. Someone's going to catch me on this on the podcast.
Nah.
Yeah, I forgot something. In the
I was wondering why I had to remove fear in my spells. I was wondering if that was going to come up.
This. They cast a 30-foot fear aura around them.
Well, don't worry. I had to remove fear, so we would have only... Yeah, you're right. That's
right.
Fine.
But, you know, in the sake of the podcast, I think it, in itself, I think it played out rather nicely. Sorry, I forgot that little segment. And you have to excuse me. I just got back from Origins. I'm kind of tired.
Yeah.
They do,
I did see the regenerating.
Yes, they regenerate 2 hit points per round as per troll, as a troll. So that's why things like fire, electricity, acid, or holy, applying your holy symbol to the wound... Or to them, will not cause them to regenerate or splashing holy water upon them.
Mm.
They're
so
double hit.
The fact that I had some spells to protect us from negative plane, that was a little bit of a red herring to mislead us.
That would have worked because, in my opinion, that would have worked because they are kind of like they're drawing their power from like maybe a negative material plane because they're undead. So
I mean, it doesn't say that they're actually from the negative material plane, so I don't think that really would have helped us.
Yeah, maybe. So. Maybe
okay.
not.
Okay.
So they attack with their fists, 1 hit points of damage per round. Each attack a 25% chance of causing leprosy.
Ooh.
Okay,
that's
so I definitely needed to save that disease.
Yes.
That's why those wounds were putrefying. I was rolling like 1.7%. Yeah, so each wound you got from Grimthar is starting a advanced leprosy.
Oh, wonderful.
What?
So, definitely... this is a good point. Always read your casting time, people.
Yes.
Because if this were a real game, wasting your only cure disease spell because you didn't bother to check that it takes 10 minutes to cast would not be a good thing.
Well, you know... luckily, the disease here, it says, doesn't become fatal for 1 to 6 months. So,
okay.
In that time, you'd have plenty of time. Also, you got that maggot thing going, those worms that shoot out of their head. Same to hit chance. as their attack, and it takes about a melee round to penetrate the skin. But it takes 1 to 4 melee rounds to get to your brain. And once they burrow into your brain, you will become a son of Caius.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing. Usually when stuff starts burrowing into your skin, you don't want to wait to see what happens.
No.
Right, so you are taking immediate actions and very good on that.
Oh, yeah.
But spells like Remove Curse or Cure Disease will destroy it. Neutralize Poison or Dispel Evil will delay it by 1 to 6 full turns. Mm-hmm. These creatures, and at the end, as they turn as mummies.
Wait. The Cure Disease will destroy the Son of Caius?
Destroy the maggot, the worm.
But if Cure Disease takes a turn to cast and they get into your brain in 1 to 4 rounds, it's not going to help you too much.
Not really.
Well, that's out of the book here.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I know. Unless he had it on a scroll, I guess.
Yeah. Or magic item. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Right. So, and they turn as a mummy.
Okay. Yeah, you would have given it away if you had told me that you're rolling it as a mummy. Well, not giving it away, but I would have thought I was turning skeletons, and then that doesn't work. And
yeah. Right. So, yeah, that's the Son of Caius. It's actually one of the coolest monsters out of the Fiend Folio, which I do like as a monster book, so.
I think we're starting to discover that as we do these various creature features, that because the Fiend Folio is one of the most fun things to go snooping around in for a good monster, I think we're proving right there the value of a Fiend Folio.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That was fun, guys. Hope you enjoyed that.
Definitely.
Awesome. Cool. Love it.
Well,
all right.
As we're reaching upon 1 hour and 50 minutes here,
we
could start cueing the Saturday Night Live end theme music now. Jason, can we legally do that or no? You don't think so?
Probably not. Yeah, sure. Sure, I'll just pull that out of my library.
Okay, great. Yeah. So as you can
I'll
hear
get
the
lawyers, yeah. See what we can do.
As you can hear the Saturday Night Live ending theme music here, that nice piano theme thing going. We'd like to thank all our sponsors. Oh, we don't have any. Never mind. If you'd like to become a sponsor. Give us a shout, rfistaff@gmail.com. Visit the website, rfipodcast.com. And visit us on Facebook, facebook.com/rfipodcast. And if you have any thoughts or comments, drop us a line. Visit us on the forums, and Vince signing off.
And don't forget, we're on CompuServe at forum 6837297/B5, or just for, You can also send us. You can find us on the shortwave radio in somewhere in the 1500 span.
Hey! I have a shortwave radio. Don't knock it.
What is our CB handle? If you're looking for us, if you're trucking down the road and you're trying to find us, remember the roll for initiative 18 wheeler is always somewhere in Arizona. Just look for us.
Wow! You can find us at alt.games.
Oh, God.
That's
Usenet.
Usenet. That's what we're doing.
Yes.
So that my Apple II can finally get on.
Okay. We're going to say keep it original, keep it old school, and keep it funny. Have a good night, everybody.
Night, everyone.
Bye.
Roll for initiative.